You're listening to In the Drink. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. You know, when I'm not hosting In the Drink, you can usually find me at my restaurants, Fausto and Lalu, but those restaurants are closed due to the coronavirus pandemic. So I'm going to do something a little different this season. You know, in the past, I had focused really on winemakers. I love speaking with winemakers, but this coronavirus pandemic is affecting everyone across the wine industry. And so what I want to do is give you stories from people across the industry, so how this has affected everyone, you know, and there's some really illuminating conversations that we've had. I do want to give a plug to the Fausto and Lalu employee funds. So what we've done, like many other restaurants, is set up employee funds, and these are funds that just go to the employees of the restaurants. None of the owners. We don't take part in it at all. And the reality is we had to lay everyone off on March 15th. And you know, some of those people still haven't gotten unemployment yet. We're hoping to reopen one day and to bring them all back. But until then, these are the people who, you know, took care of you when you came in, poured you the wine, remembered your favorite drink. And you know, they're struggling right now. So every dollar of this that you give would go directly to the Fausto or Lalu employee fund. If you go to Fausto or Lalu's Instagram, there's a link to it in the bio. So that's at Fausto Brooklyn or at Lalu Brooklyn. Go to the Instagram, link in the bio. Even if you do a couple bucks, it would be so appreciated. So for today's episode of In the Drink, we have a really great guest. We have Matt Licklider on as a guest, and he owns Lioco Winery in California. Now, Lioco is actually a négociant business. So basically, what Matt does is he sources outstanding grapes from great growers who have top sites all across the state of California. And then Matt turns those grapes into some truly stunning wines that I really love. Today's episode is actually a little bit more upbeat than some of the other conversations I've heard with people in the wine industry at this time. And I think Matt really sees an opportunity for some people, especially in that négociant business model, to really adapt during these challenging times. Matt tells us about how he's looking at some of these opportunities and really why no bottle in his own personal cellar is safe during the pandemic. I hope you enjoy this conversation. I wonder if you can tell us about what life was like, you know, at the vineyards and in your world before this all happened, and how it compares to what an average day might be like for you now.
Yeah. You know, the life of a intrepid négociant, which is how I would qualify myself, is very fluid and dynamic by nature, right? So it depends on the time of the year. As you know, sometimes I'm living out of my little 22-inch Tumi roller bag for months at a time. And then other times I'm embedded here, you know, participating in harvest. And so it really depends what time of year it is. I think what has been very new for me is the fact that I was home for all, how many days in March? 31. March is generally a time that finds wine people on the road selling wine. And so Sarah and I, my wife and I, have been talking about how enjoyable it's been to be home watching the spring arrive in our town, Healdsburg. And like, I feel like really in sync with the cycles of nature. We've made a couple of sneaky trips out to see vineyards, and it's been very rewarding, I think, just to have that extra time here as opposed to out there grinding on the road.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. How are you thinking about making up for that lack of, you know, on the ground sales? Are there things that you're doing to, you know, to make up for that?
That's a good question. I don't know that it's possible. I think there's probably a whole layer of sales that are never coming back for wineries. That being said, there was a whole layer of found sales, right? I think what we did, Joe, is essentially we've been trying to give our wholesalers as much support as possible. And I want to start by, I should preface by saying our wholesalers have historically been the lifeblood of our business, right? We've sold the majority of our wine since inception to restaurants and independent bottle shops over the last 15 years. So it's been a significant blow to our business. What we've concluded in the last 4 or 5 years is that we really wanted to develop more of a balance between the business we were doing with our wholesalers and the business we were doing direct, DTC, with mailing list and wine club and things like that. So, you know, with the wholesale world really limited to us right now, especially since we were more orientated to the on-premise world, which is just completely frozen, we have put all of our energy into direct sales, you know, and we've been so grateful and so blessed that our mailing list has really stepped up. I think this messaging of, hey, if you want small family-run businesses to survive, whether they're wineries, breweries, restaurants, bottle shops, what have you, now's the time to step up and support, you know? And I think our mailing list, fortunately, really, that really came through for them, and they have been supporting in a big way. So Sarah and I have been, you know, kind of busy packing boxes and shipping wine all over the country to our mailing list members. So that was kind of the pivot we made.
Is it still possible to get on the mailing list for our listeners?
Yeah. Okay. The mailing list is open now. You can go to the website and join the mailing list. So.
And as an intrepid negociant, to use your words, how involved are you with the growing of the grapes, the vineyard practices?
Yeah, it's you know, it's an interesting question, because we buy grapes from about 15 or 16 different growers spread across 3 counties: Sonoma County, where we're based, Mendocino County to the north of us, and then we go all the way down to Santa Cruz County, which is a few hours drive from here, and buy some fruit down there. Every contract has some nuance and is slightly different. So to answer your question head on, you know, it really depends on the pedigree of the grower. You know, when we were buying grapes out at Hirsch Vineyard, or there were some years we were buying some Chardonnay at Hanzel Vineyard, these are iconic places with a long history of grape growing. We don't really have the hubris to say we're going to bring something to the table here in the way of how they should be farming their fruit. So with those kinds of arrangements, it was just like we would choose our blocks, have periodic check-ins with the grower, and then take our tonnage, you know, at the time of our choosing. The larger scale vineyards that we're buying fruit from for, say, our, you know, $25 and under bottlings, those are grower relationships where we might have more of a an interaction in the vineyard, you know, where we want to basically be making inputs in the vineyard to make sure that our blocks or our rows are farmed to our qualitative specs. So it just really depends. Winemaking, and you know this, we've had this conversation before, Joe, you know, we're all of the mind that great wines are made in the vineyard. So there's never a situation that arises where we want to be absent from the vineyard, right? We want to be in the vineyard as much as we possibly can. I think that's the way that we are able to produce wines that are transparent and really evocative of place, is by being really dialed in with what's happening in the vineyard.
And I wonder, with your conversations with the growers, have they been able to keep the vineyards fully staffed and fully up and running? I know nature doesn't really stop for a pandemic. What have those conversations been like? How will it affect the fruit that you might be able to get?
Fortunately, Joe, you know, agriculture and wine production sort of fallen under necessary enterprise. So these businesses were able to continue full on. They weren't really impacted by the shelter in place in the same way that, say, our tasting room in Healdsburg was, where we had to shutter. So the growers have moved forward. We kind of got lucky. I think the time of the year that this happened was pretty ideal. You know, it was like kind of happening after most of our growers had pruned, and then kind of right before flowering. So there wasn't a whole lot to do, like in the month of March, maybe mowing down some cover crop and kind of getting the vines ready for harvest. But the timing was fairly well situated, and I don't foresee any challenges in terms of harvest 2020. I think we're going to go right into it. And actually, we had really beautiful weather flowering. It looks like a nice crop is going to be setting out there. And yeah, I don't see any challenges with regard to the last 8 weeks in the vineyard. Really fortunate.
It sounds like you're in a pretty good place. Will this be an opportunity for you to maybe get fruit from a place where you've been looking at for a while and haven't been able to, or renegotiate a contract for maybe a few more years if you're going on a shorter term? Or do you think there are any opportunities here for you?
Yeah, those are questions that are very germane to the world of Négociant wine production, looking for the opportunities. And there are lots of them. And there would have been, even without COVID, we're kind of coming out of two really good sized crops in a really competitive marketplace for wine, as you know. So there were going to be opportunities afforded to us anyways. And now it's crazy. Like our phone is ringing off the hook with growers calling us, offering us fruit. I think what we're going to see are fruit prices coming way down. I think we're going to see a bunch of vineyards going fallow. It's going to be a tough road for growers these next 3 years, I think, in California. We have to be careful not to over leverage that. I think, you know, our business is predicated on relationships, not only in the wholesale world, but also in the fruit growing world. And you never want to win for too long, right? On one side or the other. It really has to be a win-win. And so we need to look for arrangements that are going to be sustainable for our growers and not really lean into them too hard because the market might afford us that opportunity. These are guys that we want to continue to buy grapes from no matter where the cycle goes. Said another way, we don't want to be on the other end of this, right? In a year where there's a small crop, you know, we want to make sure that we can secure the fruit that we need every year. So it's a delicate dance. I think it comes down to looking at the situation through the lens of where's the market? What's reasonable and what's sustainable for both sides, you know, because we also don't want to overpay for grapes and then be at a disadvantage going to market with wines that are costed out, you know, in a way that's not as competitive. So again, it's a dance, it's a relationship, it's a negotiation, and we're going to look for opportunities, but try not to take advantage of growers in a way that isn't sustainable.
Ordering online with 750 could not be easier. All you do is search for the product that you want. Say, a great Chianti from Monte Bernardi. Put that into your search bar. I'm going to do it right now. See how easy this is. Monte Bernardi producer. Ooh, you know what? Let's do the Reserva Saietti 2016. I'm going to add one case to my cart. I'm going to look at my cart right now. There it is, instantly uploaded. I'm going to choose the delivery date. I want this tomorrow, so let's say Wednesday, May 6th, and you click send and it goes right to your distributor and the wine gets there when you want it to be there. It's just like Amazon, except the wines are in stock and it gets there when you want it there. I couldn't tell you how invaluable a resource 750 is. When the restaurants were open, I was on 750 every single day. Now, sometimes I still peruse 750 just to look for wine for inspiration. But if you are ordering wine right now, you need to do it through 750. It could not be any easier. Speaking of the market, I guess at the consumer level, have you already noticed that there are any changes to people's buying habits, or is it sort of too early to say?
Wow. Well, certainly, we've noticed people are drinking a lot at home. I mean, I'm sure you can relate, and Sarah and I certainly can, because restaurants are shuttered. People are home cooking and opening bottles from their cellars. And so I think that there's been a little bit of a boom from that scenario. I think people who maybe historically, especially in a city like New York, would be going out for dinner 3, 4, 5 nights a week or more. And they're now, you know, prepping their own meals and opening bottles at home. I think that's really maybe depleted some of the surplus of cellared wine, which in the end might be good for small wineries like ours. I can say our mailing list is certainly in that category. We're getting tons of emails and texts, which are so great, from our members who are like sending us pictures of something they cooked at home next to one of our bottles, you know, from their cellar that they pulled out, you know. So I think maybe some of the surplus of cellared wine is being depleted. Unfortunately, I think that's at the expense of our friends in the restaurant world, like yourself. But, you know, the fact that people are drinking wine at home and really maybe kind of like reconnecting with wine in a really deeply personal way, I think is going to benefit all of us in the long run.
I guess on a personal note, when it comes to drinking wine at home, how have you been going about drinking wine at home? Are you just drinking out of your cellar? What have you guys been drinking?
We've been drinking prodigiously. We've been doing our part, not only drinking our own cellar, which, by the way, nothing is safe in our cellar. I mean, on any given Tuesday night, we might open a bottle of Chave Hermitage with the sausages we have on the grill. You know, Grand Cru Chablis, all of our best wines are open for business. So we're doing that. And then we're also buying wine from our friends, which I think is sort of incumbent upon us. Sarah and I actually are both furloughed right now. So our wine budget is not what it normally is, but we're finding ways to buy little bits of wine from our friends in the import world, like North Berkeley Imports, Kermit Lynch, Shivrick Imports, you know, and then our friends who make American wines too, friends that we're trading out with friends locally, Reeve and Root Down and Jolie Lade. So we're definitely doing our part. And I would say on average, we're drinking two bottles a night, you know, a bottle while we're making dinner and then another bottle with dinner.
Strong. I think most people don't realize this, but as a producer, negociant, you're able to buy at wholesale price from another wholesaler. Is that right?
Yes, we're really fortunate. We have a wholesale license. So yeah, all of our friends in the import world have extended the opportunity to purchase at wholesale prices. Yeah. And sometimes we do, and sometimes we buy retail. We buy from all sources, honestly.
What I mean, I'm not sure. Like I imagine you're probably not buying Chave Hermitage and Grand Cru wines. Like those are the special wines you've been cellaring. What sort of wines are you buying actively? I know you mentioned a couple of local. Is it most some domestic Root Down and Jolie Lade? I've had a few bottles of Jolie Lade during the pandemic. But is it all domestic, or are you drinking international as well?
Well, it would be politically expedient for me to say we're drinking all domestic, but that would be a lie. You know me, Joe. You know what we like to drink. We drink everything, but the wines we cannot, quote, keep in stock in the Licklider household are things like Chablis, Muscadet, Grower Champagne, inexpensive Loire Valley Whites, Cru Beaujolais, Nebbiolo, those kinds of things. High-acid, light-bodied reds and whites, we just can't seem to buy enough of.
Is it fair to say for you that this isn't the time that you are experimenting, trying the newest, most strangest thing, but you're going towards some of the classics that have provided you with joy and comfort for years?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, Sarah and I kind of like the classics anyways. That's more of who we are from a food and a wine standpoint. Not that we don't have an interest in what's new and going on, we do, but we keep coming back to the classics. I mean, Chardonnay, it's like, is there any grape that's less hip than Chardonnay? And yet, like, it still provides Sarah and I endless amounts of joy when it comes from the right place and through the right hands. You know, it just, there's just nothing that we want to crush as hard as Chablis. There's just nothing, no other wine in the world. So to me, Chardonnay is still as relevant as it's ever been. And I know everyone's off looking for other things, especially now in California. You know, it's anything goes here. Everybody's bringing in plant material from all over the world and grafting over which is exciting. But you know, we're still devoted to the classics, and that's germane to Leoco, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when you started Leoco, just finding balanced wines that didn't have too much alcohol or oak was not so easy to find in California, right? You're really at the forefront of it. And how do you feel about seeing people not only like really embracing the style, but in fact, like expanding to like strange grapes in light, high acid styles as well and all that?
I think that's progress, right? I think that, I mean, when I co-founded Leoco in 2005, I think you and I met not long after that. The California wine world was a very different scene. You weren't even buying American wine back then. I mean, you didn't even really know about it. You had a thing of curiosity about it, you know, based on a couple of personal friendships with, you know, Jasmine Hirsch and Raj and me and a handful of other people, I'm sure. But, you know, it's incredible how far we've come in such a short time, right? In 15 years, we went from a market dominated by one or two critics and three or four flavors, all in a pushed big style, to the whole world of wine is now happening in California. Every variety you can think of and imagine, every style from, you know, ultra natty, cloudy, weird, wacky stuff to the really traditional classic stuff. So I just think California has such a more interesting offering to bring to the market. And I think that's a real good thing. And to the degree that we were a part of that and testing the market and pushing that forward, you know, we're happy. We're happy to be a part of that.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. Probably when we first met, I did not imagine myself ever buying domestic wine on a list in the, you know, in those years. And you know, now it's a part of every list that I'm part of it. You know, I'm happy to support American producers because they're doing great things. And I think you're, you know, a big part of moving that conversation forward and making people realize that, you know, America is capable of making these wines. We just hadn't been doing it. And you're right. It's for sure. Jasmine and Raj in my ear as well was super helpful. I wonder if you think that when we go back to some semblance of normalcy, if this will have any lasting impact on you and your business?
That is the $64 million question. And that's something that we're talking about every day. I think there's definitely going to be some takeaways. You know, broad strokes, we've been talking a lot about how we can be effectual in the marketplace of wine without constantly chasing it, being out there, getting on airplanes, staying in hotels, rental cars, just spending tremendous amounts of time, money, and energy in the marketing of our wines in this sort of very old block and tackle face-to-face way. I think the virtual world that's been opened up to us, you know, in light of COVID is going to have staying power. And we're really thinking about how we can leverage it going forward. In other words, instead of flying to Massachusetts to have a 20-minute speaking part in a sales meeting for our wholesaler, you know, sandwiched between 10 or 15 other suppliers on either side, could we not get it done, you know, in the context of a Zoom meeting, or, you know, a YouTube channel or Facebook Live? Can we not kind of develop a comfort level with this in the wine industry that is effective? I think that's still remains to be seen. These platforms are available to us, but will they be effective? I hope so. Like I said, I mean, we still want to be out there. We're always going to come to New York and visit our clients and participate in this sort of the movement that's required, but can we scale it back? Can we do it in a way that's more sustainable, that makes us a smaller carbon footprint, that doesn't cause so much stress on our bodies? You know, those are the kinds of questions we're wrestling with. It might necessitate us being a smaller winery too, shrinking our production size and having expectations for growth that are more in line with what may be a smaller wine market for a while. So, but I like that. I'm kind of excited about this reshuffling. You know, somebody sent me a quote the other day. It was a Charles Darwin quote, and it was something we've all heard a riff on at one time or another, but it was, I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something to the effect of, it's not the strong or even the smartest that are going to survive. It's the ones that are the most equipped to adapt. And I think that applies not only to wineries, but also to entrepreneurs like yourself, restaurateurs, retailers, you know, people in media. We have to find ways to adapt. We can't go back to the old model and expect to be successful.
I wonder if as a negociant, you maybe have more tools in your belt to adapt than someone who's a winery. They have their vineyards. They make their production from a specific amount. Like, I feel like maybe you have more flexibility, but also perhaps I wonder if there are some lessons, you know, over your career as a negociant that have sort of prepared you for this time a little bit better.
I think that's a great question, Joe. I do feel like we've always been in the position to be a bit more fluid with the market. I mean, look, it's the business model of negociant winemaking is there's pros and cons like every other model. But I think one of the pros is because we're not tied to one piece of land where we have more or less fixed costs in farming that piece of land, we can move around. And I'd like to think that we're going to be in a good position here coming out of it. I think we can look at where the opportunities are in terms of buying grapes, take advantage of those opportunities, and pivot. You know, we're still a really small ship. We're not like an ocean liner. So we can always make these fast, real-time decisions in a way that I think the estate model cannot.
I wonder if there's any hopeful stories that you've come across during this time. I mean, you sound like you're pretty optimistic about this, so I'm happy about that. But I wonder if there's anything you've seen amongst, you know, maybe your fellow either winemakers, negociants, growers, just the wine industry in general that's giving you hope that when we get out of this, there might be some ways in which it's a better industry.
You know, I'd like to think that we'll find a way to move forward in the hospitality world at large in a way that is more sustainable. I think there are aspects of it that have been exposed by this. Maybe it's time to update. Back to what I said earlier, instead of me getting on a plane 2 and 3 times a year to visit a market, could I get it done in once a year and then follow it up with some virtual support, some online support? That to me is just going to be better for everybody. And so that's what I'm hanging on to is, can we update? Can we update what is a very old fashioned model, the 3-tier system, in a way that works for everybody, that doesn't necessarily compromise any level of it, but just is more efficient.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Joe, it's my pleasure. I always love talking to you.
So that's it for this episode of In the Drink. I really hope you enjoyed my conversation with Matt Licklider of Leoco. He's such a great guy, and I thought it was a little bit more of an uplifting episode, which we could all use right now. I want to give a big thanks to all of you for listening again. Also to Jessamine Molly, our producer of Seaplane Armada. She does a great job every week. And a huge thanks to our sponsors, 750 and Melio. We literally could not do this without you. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Just a reminder that In the Drink is coming to you on Tuesdays and Fridays this season. So if you subscribe, you can get the episodes as soon as they come out. And if you have a chance, please do rate us in iTunes or Apple Podcasts. Those ratings really help us out so much. They help other people find this podcast. I hope you liked it. And another quick reminder about the GoFundMes for Fausto and Lalu. If you go to either of our Instagrams, you can find links to the GoFundMe. Thanks again so much for listening. This episode of In the Drink is brought to you by Melio. Melio is the leading payment solution platform for the wine and spirits industry. They work with tons of great distributors. And if you are a buyer and you don't want to deal with paper, you don't want to deal with writing checks anymore, Melio is perfect for you. One of the things I really love about Melio is that they make it really easy for you to do all of your payments in one place. You don't need to be an accountant. You don't need to be a CPA. You can actually pay all of your bills all in one place, and you can even pay them with credit card. And that's for vendors that don't normally take credit card. And I'll tell you what, during these times when cash is tight, paying with credit card is not the worst thing, you know, at least for some restaurants. So I truly recommend Melio. I think they're a great company and appreciate their support during these challenging times.